Super Talk 94.1 FM and AM 930 WRVC present Tri-State Viewpoint. To join the program, call 304-399-8255 or toll free at 877-420-8255. Now, from the Kindred Capital Building in Huntington, Gene Dean and Bobby Nelson.
Hey, welcome to Tri-State Viewpoint. Glad to have you along today, where the Tri-State comes to talk 5 days a week. And we're having a little feedback there, but I hope we're on the air okay now.
Yeah, we seem to be okay now.
Okay. Shall I repeat myself?
Go ahead and repeat yourself, Bobby.
Welcome, Tri-State, where the Tri-State comes to talk 5 days a week with me and Gene Dean. We have guests and interesting topics, and we happen to have a very interesting guest in the studio with us today, Gene.
Well, that's exactly right, Bobby, because now that the government shutdown is resolved, the debt limit collapse didn't happen. So what is the big topic of conversation? Well, of course, it's the Affordable Care Act. That's all you hear about, and we're going to tell you a little bit more about it. And we have a professional to talk with us about the Affordable Care Act. As a matter of fact, just a couple of weekends ago, Bobby, I went to Ritter Park to see the art in the park and spoke with a lady, and she said to me, you know, my husband knows all about this Affordable Care Act. and he's in the insurance business, and I said, who's that? And she said, that's Tom Delegatti. And lo and behold, he is the owner and operator of the Thoroughbred Agency in Ashland, Kentucky. And Tom Delegatti is right here in the studio with us. Tom, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Gene. Thank you, Bobby.
Yeah, glad to have you.
I know that you can certainly help us understand some of the mess that's going on, and I'm not just talking about the mess with the website and all that which they're trying to clear up. But I don't think anyone or very few people really understand how it's going to affect them as individuals, because I'm hearing strange things like you won't be able to keep your private insurance coverage, and I know that some people who are on Medicare are concerned that perhaps they won't be able to stay on that or maybe on their supplemental plans. And if you would sort of set us straight on all this, particularly about whether or not people are going to be able to keep their existing insurance plans that they have.
Well, basically, first of all, on the Medicare situation, anybody that's Medicare eligible does not purchase insurance through the ACA.
Okay.
So they'll continue to do what they're doing now, which
okay.
is their supplements,
covered by
their Medicare.
Right. Okay, all right.
Through ACA, it will determine whether or not a person's eligible for Medicaid, or I say K-CHIP because I'm predominantly in Kentucky. But
is that for children?
That's for children.
Okay.
So the West Virginia CHIP program as well.
Mm-hmm.
And those type of programs. And that would basically go through the exchanges as well.
I see.
On individual insurance that people now currently have, if they are covered under a large group, there's not going to really be any changes. There may be some things that the large group is going to have to abide by, such as some of the essential health benefits that are mandated, but not necessarily all.
Okay.
The smaller groups, under 100, will basically have to basically have the coverage that is required, the 10 essential health benefits, a limit of $2,000 per individual for a deductible, you know, some things that will actually drive cost up. Because a lot of plans have maybe a $2,500 deductible for those outpatient expenses. They may have copays for the doctor visits and, of course, prescription coverages, et cetera. Individuals that just have their own private policy that they purchased on their own, they don't have it provided by their employers, so they buy an individual health plan, they are going to see that they're going to have to ultimately go to an ACA-type plan because they have to have the essential benefits. They have to meet the actuarial values, which is 60%, they call the bronze plan, 70% silver, 80%, or 70% silver, 80% gold, and 90% platinum.
Okay, but you're saying ultimately they will have to do that. So they're not on the same January 1st deadline as other people who are trying to get into the exchanges.
No. Right now, most carriers are maybe making an offer of a non-normal renewal date of December of this year. I heard Highmark is still considering it, but they haven't decided yet. Anthem in Kentucky and Ohio is making this offer where you can continue to keep what you have till at least next December. Part of the reason that the individuals will have to go to an ACA plan is that most of the carriers that are participating in the states have modified or changed the networks. So Anthem in Kentucky, as an example, does not have as broad a network as it did under the old plans. And when I say the old plans, the plans that are existing now, the individual plans.
Yeah, Tom, I understand that about 80% of the population of this country won't be affected at all by ACA. They're covered either in their with their employer, or they're under Medicare, veterans, CHIP, a number of those. So you have about 40-some million overall and a population of 250-some million. So if you're talking about those who don't have insurance now, that's the group we're talking about. And those are the ones that will be required to have insurance. Now, they were supposed to start enrolling October 1st to be eligible to actually receive benefits on January 1, but if you enroll later, your startup is a little later, so you can continue to enroll, but it isn't going, like, if you don't enroll by the end of December, you are, you know, you're out of it. This thing continues, right?
Right. The initial enrollment period has been extended to March 31st of next year.
Okay. Is that because of the glitch?
Now they actually extended it prior to the glitch.
Oh.
So maybe they were anticipating that, you know, this would be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But I think ultimately the glitches will be resolved. It may not be that quick, but they will be resolved, mm-hmm. I believe.
Any clue as to who's to blame for this?
I don't know if it's the outfit that basically set up the interfacing, the site itself. I'm sure that it's a monumental task if you consider that all the carriers have different platforms. They don't necessarily operate in the same platform as far as for pricing and doing quotes and providing benefit sheets, etc. So to interface with Anthem and Medical Mutual and Highmark and United Healthcare and Humana, I would think that would be a lot more difficult than it would be expected.
Well, it's generally recognized now that this is one of the larger undertakings in terms of a government program since almost Social Security, even bigger than that, because of the complexity you're involving the government, private insurance agencies. Mm-hmm. You've got the various state exchanges and all. I read somewhere where there's 500 million codes involved in getting everybody tied into this. So it isn't something that's going to be done overnight. As we talked about yesterday, the operative word here is just be patient. It'll take time, but it's going to have to be, the bugs have to be worked out. Yeah. But it is a huge undertaking.
But you know, Bobby, I hate to say it, but the Republicans in Congress wanted to delay the start of this for a year, and maybe that wasn't such a bad idea.
Well, I think that if they had gotten it delayed, it probably would have maybe kept it from ever going into place.
Oh, do you? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think unfortunately, it's tied into politics, and that they want object to everything the president wants to do or hold it up, and
that's true.
Got tied into this. But I was reading about both the Social Security and Medicare when those came along. They had the same problem, still they were problems. But I want to ask you, Tom, about Kentucky. Now, Kentucky has its own exchange. The state has West Virginia's partner with the federal government. How is this working in Kentucky?
Well, there were some problems early on, and there's still some glitches. People that basically go in on their own, if they mark something incorrectly, it's very difficult to correct. It's very difficult to go backwards and correct. You don't just hit that back button. It doesn't seem to work that way.
Yeah. Of course, people can do it by telephone, or they can even print out a form, can't they, too?
Right. They can print out a form. They can call. They can do it online. Online is what is most recommended because it's, I don't want to say it's the simplest, but not everybody has access to that.
Right.
Well, I went to the Kentucky Kentucky Connect, I think they call it, mm-hmm. which is a very good website. They have, and they encourage people, and incidentally, every insurance agent who's qualified can also provide assistance and help people and
right.
direct them the right way. But they suggested that you do it by phone, if possible, because you get immediate answers. You're talking mm-hmm. to someone, and sometimes online it takes a while, or even
yeah.
if you...
I would be more comfortable if I had to do it that way.
And you talk to somebody, yeah. and it seemed like... Of course, this was the page they put together. I don't know when it went into operation, but it is just a very good web page. Of course, Governor Beshear has been very supportive of this, mm-hmm. and that helps. And you have, what, Jane and Tom, what, 17 states that just refused at all to do it.
And taking part in it.
And in some of the red states where they have red states, they're dragging their feet or they don't want to do mm-hmm. anything. This complicates things because you're dealing with states that don't want it, states that are partnering, and states yeah. are in it with both feet.
Bobby, I think actually for West Virginia, don't you have that telephone number that people can, and I'll tell you what, while you're mm-hmm. looking for that, oh, you've got it already
there.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, the big lender online is, you know, healthcare.gov. That's the
right.
one having the glitches so
mm-hmm.
far. But you can call an 800 number. It's 1-800-318-2596. And that is the standard federal number. So
okay, so that would apply then to Kentucky and Ohio and other states as well,
yes,
I guess,
yes.
that are participating. Yeah, okay.
Kentucky has its own numbers. Has
right.
It,
okay.
And West Virginia has it, but you call the insurance, you get the insurance agent, the commission, mm-hmm. and they simply refer you to
that number. Give it to us again, Bobby. 1-800-318-2596. Okay. And listeners, we're going to take a short break here for some commercial messages, but when we come back, not only, of course, you've got that number, we'll give it to you again before the end of the program, but also if you have questions that you would like to ask Tom, please give us a call. We are at 304-399-8255 or 1-877-420-8255. This is Tri-State Viewpoint with Gene Dean, Bobby Nelson, and our guest this afternoon, Tom Delegatti. Give us a couple of minutes, and we'll be right back here on Super Talk 94.1 FM and AM 930.
This is Tri-State Viewpoint on Super Talk 94.1 FM and AM 930.
Hey, welcome back to Tri-State Viewpoint, and we'd like to hear from you. Give us a call here. Our guest is Tom Delegatti, who has ties in West Virginia. In fact, you live in West Virginia, right?
Yes, I do.
Although he has a business in Kentucky, the Bluegrass State, and his agency is a Thoroughbred agency, and it's an independent insurance agency. Tell us a little bit about your agency and what kind of services you can provide as it relates to this particular Affordable Care Act.
Well, we operate in all three states, so we're licensed in Ohio, West Virginia, and Kentucky for all lines of insurance. So health insurance, of course, is kind of what we're focused on currently.
Sure.
And we anticipate to stay fairly focused with that till March 31st, at least.
Mm-hmm. Why March 31st?
That's open enrollment.
Extended, okay. Mm-hmm.
Now, your main office is in Ashland, Kentucky, right?
Ashland, Kentucky.
Any reason why you went there as opposed to Ona, West Virginia or somewhere?
Well, I was with Prudential for 33 years, and they were my broker-dealer. And I had been in management for about 20 years in different states. Moved back to West Virginia because I'm from West Virginia. I'm from the Fairmont area. And moved back to West Virginia with my family. When Prudential ended up closing offices down and just going to the larger cities, mm-hmm. they basically said, well, you know, agents can open their own. Well, I looked at Ashland as being kind of central to the
mm-hmm.
tri-state.
Yeah.
I had clients as far as Portsmouth, Ohio, and Grayson, Kentucky, and
mm-hmm.
all over.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that's why I ended up in Ashland.
Okay. And you, with respect to the Affordable Care Act, how have you been? How many people have you had come to call you, or what kind of questions do they have, and how have you been able to help them?
Well, we're starting to get quite a few more. We work with a lot of small businesses that are probably not going to offer health insurance going forward because it's really going to be more beneficial both for the small business and most of the employees. The problem in a small business is if they offer health insurance to the employee and they pay 50% of the employee cost, which is required in a small group, and then they have available dependent coverage at the obligation of the employee, which is typical. So I'll pay half of your insurance, Bob, if you want to cover your family, whatever that is, you're going to pay for that.
Is that a real hardship on small businesses? As we've heard a lot about how it's going to hurt business. Will it really, in your estimation?
In my estimation, the small businesses, in most situations, it's not going to hurt.
Okay.
They're not subject to the employer mandate. So even though that's been delayed for a year, they won't be subject to it going forward. So they don't have that $2,000 per person if they don't provide insurance.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In most situations, the small groups, basically you've got two people that participate in paying the premiums. You've got the employer and the employee. In most situations, if those employees have a household income that's less than 400% of the federal poverty level, they qualify for a subsidy. So as an example, a family of four can make $94,000 and still qualify for a subsidy.
Hmm. That's quite a high, or at least for this area, that's quite a high family income for four people.
Well, what we're looking at is that most of the businesses that we deal with, there's, you know, unless it's a group of physicians or something to that effect, are, you know, the majority of their employees are going to be within that 400% federal poverty levels. Yeah. It changes. For a single employee, the federal poverty level, they qualify for a subsidy up to about $43,000. For a two-person family, it's $62,000. Three people is $76,000. Four people is $94,000. Mm-hmm. Six people is $126,000.
Okay.
The on the qualifying thing with the employer, where the new law requires that the group coverage or any policy meet the minimum value that's in the federal law, which means you can't use pre-existing conditions, a bunch of other things. So that is going to somewhat increase the cost to small business if they are providing insurance for their employees. But based on the income thing, it is advantageous for some of these employees to go over to the exchange and see if they qualify and come under some kind of state exchange program.
Well, right. Okay. If a business basically says, well, we're not going to offer coverage after starting in 2014, then that opens up the subsidies or the exchange to all the individual employees and their families. So now the employer who's doing this because they feel moral responsibility in most situations to provide benefits, they've been providing it also for employee retention. Well, there's no advantage anymore to that, especially if the cost is getting so prohibitive for families to participate. An example is if you take a business where the average employee cost is $4,000 and the employer's paying $2,000 and the employee's paying $2,000, and then to add to families another, say, $700 a month. Well, if they pay half of the employee's cost, that's $2,000. If that $2,000 is less than 10%, 9.5%, but to keep the math simple, say 10% of the total household income, then the rest of the family doesn't qualify for a subsidy, but yet the employee can't afford to add his family on for that additional $600 or $700.
That $600 or $700 a month?
A month.
With a decent deductible, too. Pretty good size deductible.
Under the Affordable Care Act, with the subsidies, what you can do is you can bring in a third party because of the affordable or the tax credits. So that you got three people, in a sense, participating in the pricing. So if my family coverage is $14,000 a year and I make $80,000 and I have a family of four, I'm limited to basically 10% of that $80,000, so that's $800. $8,000, I'm sorry. Divide that by 12, that's a premium of about $670. That's all I'm going to pay. So the balance of that is going to be paid by the tax credits.
Okay.
So I'm going to pick up a tax credit of about $6,000 for my family's coverage.
Which is going to reduce even further.
Well, if my employer decides to basically give me a raise because we were splitting these costs, then it's going to further reduce what I'm paying. So my employer's paying less, I'm paying less, and the government's. So we've got a third premium payer in most of these situations. So they really need to evaluate and say, well.
You know, I think, Bobby, if I were at the point where family-wise, age-wise, et cetera, that I was going to go into this. I think the mere complications of it would deter me. I mean, I know you've checked out the website, but it sounds amazingly difficult.
That's why we have these, the glitches are part of it. But the other part is that there was anticipation that people would need to be kind of guided along, so the federal government made available to the state monies to hire navigators, people to help guide them through. Now, we did not take advantage of that in West Virginia to the extent we could, and that complicates it. But you're right, it is. But in the long run, if you make it through this maze, the family or your premiums can go down.
Exactly. But have you had these navigators in Kentucky?
I don't know of any yet. I believe that maybe they do have some.
Yeah.
There's two or three different types of people that can assist. A navigator is not a licensed agent, so they can't basically help guide you with plans.
But a licensed agent such as yourself.
A licensed agent. And we highly recommend people talk to an agent. Talk to a local agent. Call us. Talk to somebody that basically understands how these programs work. The price or the premiums are no different on the exchange regardless of how you do it. So we are compensated, but the government decided that they had to involve brokers, which is what my agency is. We handle all the different carriers. Agents might handle one carrier, so a person that's maybe an agent.
So you have to be a broker.
So you don't have to be.
But they included them as participants along with that. Let me also, before we run out of time here, this is not a direct money to the people who qualify for subsidy and under ACA. The subsidy goes directly to the company that provides the coverage.
Yeah,
people think that
money
the
in
federal government's putting money. That here we are, another one of those what they call the entitlement type program.
Yeah.
And then the law is designed to pay for itself over time. So they're written a lot, but we have to see that. But we're about out of time, I guess.
Is such a complicated topic, Tom, that no way we could get all we needed to say in this 30-minute section of our program, but we do thank you for coming in and helping us to understand some of it. It's really very good of you. Our guest has been Tom Delegati, who is with the Thoroughbred Agency in Ashland, Kentucky, and we are coming up to our news break.
You're listening to Tri-State Viewpoint on Super Talk 94.1 FM and AM 930.
Hey, welcome back to Tri-State Viewpoint, where tonight at 6 o'clock the CK Autumn Fest Parade will take place. But right now we have someone in the studio that always comes dressed like he's going to a formal inauguration in Washington, and I'll leave that up to Gene to introduce who it is.
Well, with that kind of introduction, he needs no introduction. Looking as sartorially splendid as usual is Huntington Mayor Steve Williams in the studio with us.
Thank you, Ernie. Ernie, thank you very much.
We're so glad you're here with us, Steve.
And thanks for inviting me again.
Okay, and we've got lots of questions for you about different things, and why don't we start off by telling us what's happening with the marina?
That all of the boats should be out of the water. If they aren't all the way out of the water by now, they will be here soon. David Duffield, an attorney in town, has had the lease for the last several years. He and I have entered into an agreement with one another that it's in the best interest for his company and the city that we get all of the boats out of the water and remove the barge. In essence, what happened was this, is that because the city is self-insured, our property and casualty insurance came in, and we found that they would insure everything except the marina. And the marina had about $700,000 of claims over years. And in essence, that came out of the city because we're out of the city's budget because we're self-funded. And when we received word that the marina would not be insured, we would have to have relied upon the David Duffield's company's insurance. And I've indicated to him, I said, we can't place the city at risk, and I surely don't think that we should place you at risk. we need to get the boats out of the water, close the marina down, let's remove the barge. Once all of the boats are out of the water, we have a company that that will come in and remove the barge for us, and we're working out the final details of it. But in essence, the cost to us is going to be we will let them have the barge and scrap it, and for whatever that cost is.
Is that the company that's downriver that's always really helpful?
And this isn't the McGinnis. This is this is the Mann family.
Okay.
And we are going to work out some specific details, but in essence, they will remove the barge, and there will be nothing there. We're going to have to remove the spud poles and everything else that's everything
well,
there.
Well, of course, you know who was in office when that all came about, which we was very successful for a while, but we couldn't afford to do it as a city, so we actually leased it out. But my question is, getting rid of all this now, because time is taking its toll, what are your plans for a marina?
Well, we're going to. We have individuals who are approaching us saying that they want to do something with a marina, and we're going to receive some riverfront redevelopment proposals. I think a marina or some commerce absolutely makes sense down there. What we want to be able to see is what the proposals are and who has the financial wherewithal to be able to do that. But I have heard from at least three different developers, and I'm certain that there are more who are out there who are interested in doing something. One thing that I am absolutely convinced is that if somehow we get commerce on that side of the flood wall on the river, that will help with all things that we are wanting to
do. No doubt. When we had the big boat that came in all the time, the West Virginia Bell.
West Virginia
and
Bell.
And then later the Army Corps, they expanded the docking and all down there. And it is a potential. I may have told you this, Gene and Mayor. when I was mayor, I went to a waterfront development conference in Washington, D.C., and I was surprised to learn that the riverfront in Huntington is considered one of the more primitive of the large cities in the country, that they've preserved everything in the waterfront, but it didn't encourage a lot of economic development.
Yeah.
But that would be a prime thing to
have
development.
Huge. Well,
when you say primitive, you're talking environmentally?
Undeveloped.
Undeveloped.
For
example, like they do in Westmoreland, don't put anything down here. We want to be able to walk our dog on the flood wall. This kind of stuff, this head in the sand thinking.
But
we have the facility there for it, and we still have it.
Yes, the port of Huntington is the largest inland port in the nation. And what has amazed me is the amount of commerce that actually does.
The tonnage.
Comes through, and the millions of dollars. Now, one thing that people aren't aware of is that Campbell Transportation Company actually gifted to the city river frontage from 3rd Street West to 7th Street West, just on the west side of Taylor's Iron and Metal, and then down past Ducky's. There is about 2,400 feet of river frontage that was given to the city about 3 months ago. And with that, I kept talking to individuals who have transportation companies. Is it wise for the city to take this on? And said, absolutely. Having that, what it appraises for in excess of $1.5 million. And what Campbell Transportation, it's based out of Pittsburgh, found that it was more profitable to them to give it to the city as a charitable contribution than it was to sell it outright, because of the amount of money that it was appraised for.
The tax.
And is it a clear area? I mean, there's no sunken barges
there's
or
no
anything
sun, it's
there.
It's all clear.
You know, you may want to go back and look at it, but when the redevelopment of 14th Street, you know, when that occurred, one of the proposals included a wharf or a dock there, because you can approach that 14th Street from the river there, and that would be another entrance way to building up the economic development.
Sally Cyrus took me on a little West End tour. She knows everything and who lived
sure
on what. And she was showing me that down in there. And of course, in the days before the flood wall. This is how that was just open all the way down. But then in part of the development, there are plans for a wharf. Mm-hmm. I agree with each of you in the plans that you all had put together. We clearly have an opportunity, if we can do something to encourage commerce to be on the riverside of the flood wall.
Do you envision another restaurant? Because people love to eat by water, whether it's a lake or a river.
I don't know. Yeah. This is one of the few times I want to go in with a clean slate and just say, all right, now
see
wow
what
me.
The proposals
just,
are.
Yeah, just yeah. wow me. You know, uh-huh. just come in and lay something out and show. Dream a bit, lift our sights heavenward, but also show us how that they have the capital capability to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the other things that's been kicked around is a pedway, walking across Villers Memorial Pullman Square right into the.
Now I've had conversations with Bill Dargish and others about that. The one big problem that you have is taking it up high enough to be able to clear what CSX would require for proper clearance, and they ran into some difficulty with this. I think that there are opportunities for us to be able to do that to commerce along Harris Riverfront Park, but there's another huge opportunity that none of us have ever really looked at that I'm aware of, is we start to look down at the AC&F property on the other side of Marshall. That river. Entire development down to the flood walls, down driving around it and all, and you can then take it to the other side of the flood wall. I've talked to the Port Authority, the State Port Authority, and they're certainly interested in trying to create a development there. There's some that's the untold opportunity.
Well, there was a proposal floated about all that, which included a maritime academy.
Patrick Grace was interested in that.
I used to refer to the Ohio River as our third interstate because it has so much potential with the traffic on it. And we really, I guess I would, I'm sure Jim would, anything we can do to
economic
development, including bringing the river.
Yeah, it's just that the idea of really opening up the riverfront has been floating around for at least 40-some years that I can remember, going back into the 70s. And we just don't seem to be able to bring it all together.
And what's interesting is I've been invited down to LSU in Baton Rouge in December. The American Institute of City Design, in concert with the American Association of Architects. Does that sound like
the AIA?
And the National Conference of Mayors.
Okay.
We are actually going to go down there, and they're going to have architects, they're going to have city planners, they're going to have environmental engineers and such, and I'm going to be discussing with them in detail the plans for the ACF property and the development and the river and its proximity to Marshall University, the environmental issues that we might have to place, and the intent is to have 3 days down there with them giving us advice. There are 8 mayors throughout the South that have been invited to come down to this. And we're going to have some discussions about this. Now, you can design anything. You've got to find the wherewithal to be able to actually pay for it.
Right.
But what's interesting, we know who owns the ACF property, Carl Icahn. They have actually been in Huntington and have reviewed the property. We've sat down. We've talked about the opportunities that are there. If we can identify a proper development, an anchor to be developed there, we know that Carl Icahn has the capital to do whatever is necessary. We just have to come up with a proper business plan.
Well, there was an idea that was floated just a few months ago, wasn't there? Is that still
a
hotel?
The lack of money and a solid reputation, I think, shot that down. But that is a prime piece of property. Have you considered, or is it already making that a TIF? That will be part of, I remember, when ACF shut down, Carl Icahn is one of those guys who comes in and buys up companies and sells off the nice part and then lets the rest of it just sit there.
He leaves it for us.
And he's a tough customer to deal with because he looks at his bottom line, not the other guys. Mm-hmm. And that's the way
he didn't become a billionaire by accident.
he's not that community oriented, though, I can tell you that.
No, but he is bottom line oriented. And they have, his company has a valuable piece of property where, as they came in and spoke with us, that this property is now, with the way Huntington is, this is ripe for development. Now, obviously, the $1 million or the $50 million question is, what is the proper development to go on that property?
Well,
we know one thing.
What's
a baseball
that?
Field.
A baseball field. Actually, that's over there. That's across 3rd Avenue,
know,
between 3rd
other,
and 5th.
But you got all that. That all connects.
And a hotel.
Yeah, it all comes together.
You know, with baseball being the national pastime, I guess it's still considered the national pastime.
Well, tonight. Tomorrow.
We need a baseball field. So
yes,
we also need to take a break here. This is Tri-State Viewpoint. Bobby Nelson, Gene Dean, and our guest right now is Huntington Mayor Steve Williams. Stay with us just for a few minutes for some commercials, and then we'll be back with you here on Supertalk 94.1 FM and AM 930.
Supertalk 94.1 FM and AM 930.
Hey, welcome back to Tri-State Talk. We do have the exceptional mayor of the city of Huntington sitting right here in the studio. He's right out of in Esquire, but if you want to ask him a question or make a comment, give us a call, 304-399-8255 or 1-877-420-8255. I have a question for the mayor.
Well, go right ahead, Bobby.
Mayor.
Stump the mayor.
Stump the mayor. What size shoes do you wear? No.
Well.
the revenues look fairly steady in the city. What are your three big items in this fiscal year and that you have ahead of you that you have as, like, the president has Social Security, immigration, and farm? What are your three biggies that you want?
Well, the biggest sources of revenue are the B&O taxes, naturally, and the sales tax has proven to be a large means. The user fee, and now we're going to continue to pave like we.
I want your three priorities now. Don't fish around here. Give me the three priorities so I can hold you to them.
My principal priority is we have to create jobs first and foremost. And the way that you end up creating jobs is we create a TIF district in the ACF property. We also have down in the west end of Huntington with 14th Street West, we're going to redevelop the farmers market, but also we're developing an inventory which will be provided to me by January 1 of all the available properties on 14th Street West. The great opportunity that we have there is that's the only area of the city that has direct access to the interstate.
Exactly.
And then lastly is on Halgrier Boulevard, mm-hmm. is that we need to make it safer, but Northcott Court, as that property is, I am pressing that we need to make sure we begin demolition on Northcott Court before the end of the year. Mm-hmm. And then we have that we have already rezoned Halgrier Boulevard to commercial. That's going to be private investment, and
the problem is the unit certs that the housing authority has that been cleared up. They weren't given,
but that's going to come. And
will that mess up the time schedule?
No, not if we. It will if we allow it, and that's where I've been pressing. We have practically all of the families out of the section of Northcott Court, not the entire area, but the first phase that was going to be torn down. We have practically all of those people relocated.
Is
in the
that
meantime,
the area
anyway.
That faces on
yes.
Halgrier?
I think there are three segments that are there.
Okay.
Those three segments are to be torn down. Those
you
individuals.
That would be toward the end of this year?
That's what I'm pressing for. Is that when we got word a month or so ago about that the low-income tax credit had not been approved for the senior housing projects,
right.
I called the housing authority and said, regardless, we need to be pressing to knock these buildings down.
They
indicated to me that we were just shy. I think there are only about five families now in those sections that mm-hmm. need to be out. And once those are removed, we should be in a position to knock them down. Now, one of the concerns that we ran into that has been resolved was that when we had the government shutdown, we were worrying, well, will we be able to get an approval to be able to do something? I'm pressing for them to have it done before the beginning of the year, because if not, then I'm fearful that we're waiting on until spring.
Right.
I think people need to see, and it's important for the development, they need to see something happen.
Even
much
if it's
like,
demolition.
Much like at ACF, I believe that we need to be taking that property down.
Need one of those big signs, coming soon.
Speaking of listeners, signs, I wish you could see Bobby sitting here with his arms in the air. I thought he was going to fly away.
Well, okay, we got the TIF at the ACF. We got 14th.
You know, we've mentioned TIF. We've said that acronym.
Tax increment financing.
And that means that the taxes from that property
go back into the development.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And at ACF, what that would allow us to do is take that money to actually help with the flooding that we have on 3rd Avenue and 5th Avenue.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
we could build parking buildings. We can. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. All that was done up and down 9th Street, on the 9th Street
Plaza
mm-hmm. in downtown Huntington
mm-hmm.
was constructed because of it as the downtown being a TIF district.
Right.
The entrance on 3rd Avenue, about 13th Street, near the Veterans Memorial
mm-hmm.
Boulevard,
mm-hmm.
right in that area, all of that streetscape was because of the TIF financing.
Okay.
So
it's a great mechanism.
It's a huge opportunity. Now, we can do one of two things. As the downtown area was, and Kinetic Park, each are TIF districts,
mm-hmm.
but they are property tax TIFs. This is getting technical, but you can also have a sales tax TIF,
mm-hmm.
and that's really where the money is.
Okay.
Because any money, imagine on that property, no sales tax,
mm-hmm.
but any sales tax that's generated on that would be
goes into the development.
Then you've got... Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then you have money to be able to build stadiums. You have built.
You mean football?
No.
Let me ask you one quick thing here, because we're running out of time.
We have this
continual flooding of the viaducts and all that because of the separation and all. I looked, I don't know how current it is, but at one time, Huntington paid the lowest sanitary fees of any city in West Virginia. It's going to take a major project
yes.
to clear that. It means at some point
that's
you're going to have to find some
that's
revenue.
That's the fourth area that okay. we yeah. are going to have a stormwater
yes.
program that will
mm-hmm.
be implemented, and a stormwater fee that we will have proposed, passed by council, and we will... by spring start collecting. I don't know the details on what that fee is going to look like, but that's in development.
You know that will probably be necessary, and you're willing to stand on
I have
the
to. Chair. I have to. I mean, it's not...
Because all of us mealy-mouthed mayors in the past, we wouldn't push that.
Well, it's something
for yourself,
that... It's something that has... It's just something that has... Absolutely has
I raised
done.
A fee, and they threw me out of office.
Yeah, yeah.
One term, Steve. I separated the flood wall from the... They tried to run me out of town. They got me on the football stadium.
Yeah, after the football stadium, you were elected again after the football stadium.
No, I wasn't.
That was your second term.
Second term.
Yeah.
That was in
mm-hmm.
the second term?
That's
mm-hmm.
when you were
that was in 88.
Yeah. No.
And then in my second term, I raised the refuse fee, and goodbye, Gene.
But, you know, well, we have
my second month.
Well, that's why it gets hard to do those things, because everybody wants these things done, but they want the status quo. But I tell you, the stormwater thing, it's going to require really
But
a
do
fee.
It soon, and then maybe by the next election coming
it has,
around.
It has to be done.
Now, wait a minute, Steve. No. We have a system. Every mayor gets elected twice. Then we throw him out of office. So
no, actually, it didn't happen to this last guy.
No, you know? No.
That's right. One term.
Yeah, yeah.
We want you to be
we haven't had anybody go three.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm number three. Three is me.
We never have enough time. We never did get to the housing issue, but we'll do that the next
Bring
time
me back.
You come
Bring
in.
Bring me
right.
back. That'll be part of our 2025 plan.
Okay. I want you to notice that Bobby asked you your three major projects, and he
four.
Wrote them down.
I know.
And
it's
four,
them
four
them
now.
Four.
Are you going to Murfreesboro Thursday?
No, I've got too much work to do here.
You could send an agent. I'm available.
An abrupt silence. Okay, listeners.
Don't forget the parade tonight over at Sarita Canova.
We're glad that you've been with us, listeners, and we're glad that we hope that you've enjoyed our program. And I do want to remind you that tomorrow Jim Thornton from the Wheel of Fortune will be here with us, and I know you'll enjoy that. Have a wonderful night, and thanks for listening to Tri-State Viewpoint.
The John Boy and Billy Big Show, mornings 6 to 10 on Supertalk 94.1 FM and AM 930 WRVC Huntington, a service of Kindred Communications.